How do you encourage this idea of sharing your ideas and sharing your thoughts and to create something that is inclusive of all of that?
Hello and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. On the show, I interview peak performing innovators in the creative, social impact, and earth conservation spaces. I also bring you ideas and techniques that you can grab and use to set goals, create, and unlock your potential for changing yourself and the world. And now let's get to the show. Hey there, and welcome to the Innovative Mindset Podcast. I'm your host, Isolde Trachtenberg. Super, super happy that you're here. I'm also really excited to introduce you to this week's guest. And you'll understand why in a second, because she and I have so much in common. But also, she's doing work that is world-changing. Let me tell you about Jackie Badson. Jackie is an experienced designer and business futurist. She's created global brand experiences for Nike, Google Events, and YouTube. And as the co-founder of Tech Table Summit, I can't wait to get into that, Jackie has brought together the most forward-thinking minds in hospitality, tech, and investment to reimagine and shape the future of the hospitality innovation industry. Today, Jackie consults with Fortune 500 brands, startups, nonprofits, and has been a featured speaker at the United Nations not once, but twice. I'm so excited to meet you and get to know you better. Jackie, welcome.
Thank you, Isolde. I'm so excited to be here.
I am so curious about, well, first of all, about you, because just hearing a little bit about you before we started, I went, oh. You said that you're a former dancer, and then through that creative pursuit, you developed this entire business strategy and brand around experience design and being a business futurist. Can you talk a little bit about how that flowed, how you went from I'm a creative dancer all the way into I spoke at the UN last week?
Absolutely. I mean, well, first of all, I just want to, you know, thank you so much for having me on this podcast. It's amazing. I love what you're doing, and I'm so excited to be here and talking with you and your audience.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thanks.
Yes. So, yes, I mean, people are like, wait, you were a dancer? I was like, yes, I was. I was actually a dancer and a choreographer was mainly my passion. Mm. And I started in my career as a choreographer and also kind of what I call an interdisciplinary producer. Mm-hmm. So I was doing a lot of work on my own, producing my own work, which if anyone here has experience background in the arts, you know that that takes you to, you know, basically have to work in order to fund your work, in order to try to get any grants. And it was an interesting process. You know, this is before, you know, YouTube, this is before any kind of streaming or any type of tech was involved. So everything was very, you know, individualized and siloed. And the work that I was trying to do was really trying to integrate performing arts, performance arts, video, you know, spoken word, all of these things, dance, into create something that was a little bit more, you know, like I said, interdisciplinary. And then taking that, you know, out of the studio and into different places. So one of the places that I performed was at this Friday night event at Yerba Buena Center for the Arts in San Francisco. We had this mm-hmm. whole performance installation, this gallery. It was amazing. But as I started going down that process, I really started looking at how kind of dysfunctional this was in terms of trying to get, you know, funding. And as, you know, anybody that's been a dancer or any type of like gymnastics or knows, like injuries happen. Mm. And that kind of shifted my course a bit into focusing more on the kind of creative production side and business side. And I went actually, was fortunate enough to go to the Art Institute of Chicago, the School of the Art Institute of Chicago for a master's degree in arts administration, where I studied kind of this a hybrid of focusing on not just high art, but also entertainment. Mm. You know, my background really was also, I like to dance in clubs. I like to go out. I love to like experience this and absorb this kind of interesting culture that was happening. And I was watching it also transfer into kind of the museum space and vice versa. And that's what I ended up writing my thesis on, was this kind of crossover between high art and entertainment, and how that was going to the shift in how people consume art, how that was going to start expanding into, you know, culture and commerce. I then went on to New York, where I started actually on the agency side, and I was producing work that was, you know, really focused on like fashion shows and film festivals and where this kind of crossover was happening. And was building these incredible experiences, and actually got connected to Nike through that route. I was so lucky to, one of the first projects I did with them was actually at Art Basel Miami Beach. And this was, you know, a decade plus ago, where we did this huge installation and closing party for Nada. And it was so fascinating because I actually ran into a couple of my my colleagues at the time from art school, and they were like, "Oh my God, it's your thesis." I was like, "Yes, it is." I was like, yes,
"I love it.
I did it." Yeah, it was amazing. And I always was thinking, kind of, my passion was really kind of looking at, you know, what's kind of next. Where is this crossover between business and creativity? I've always had a bit of a business mind, just looking at things not just purely about the, you know, how might we, but also with the, like, where's the, you know, what's the impact this is going to have, and how do we scale this? How can we make an impact? And experiences, it's something that, as a kind of a visceral experiential learner, it's just something that I naturally gravitated to. So I've, you know, been fortunate enough to kind of take that mindset and that curiosity, and leverage that through working with some incredible brands, and really looking, you know, at kind of the forefront, what turned into what used to be kind of, you know, video and a little bit of interesting tech, really flipped upside down for me, where I went to work for Nike and became more of a digital person first. So I worked for a brand that was called Nike ID, technically NikeID.com. And again, this was more than a decade ago, where they, it was a site where you could design your own shoes. And they came to me saying, "We want to take this offline. How do we bring this experience, this digital experience, and bring it offline into real life? And what does that feel like?" And it really just opened up so many doors for me in terms of what I've done then for Google and with YouTube, and really thinking about this kind of interplay between offline and online. And now also looking, of course, with like the metaverse and what's coming next. So it's been an interesting winding career, but yeah, it's always really been about, you know, what, thinking about what's next in terms of experiences, not just with event planning or producing, which is what's most common in kind of the field I'm in, but it's really more about this connectivity, and community building and empathy and, you know, brand and, quite frankly, bottom line. So it's been a wonderful journey, and I'm excited to continue to do it.
Wow. I thank you so much for, first of all, fascinating, incredibly fascinating. And at the same time, there's a psychology at work here that I think is also fascinating. The notion that people want to, they don't just want to sit on the sidelines. They want to be part of the story, right? So when you're doing this, when you're creating these experiences, like I'm going to give you an example. My husband and I went to the Museum of Modern Art just last week or the week before. And there was a painting there of a person who was in a particularly challenging looking ballet pose. I can't even begin to describe it. And I was just sitting there sort of getting my bearings, and a group came by, and this one gentleman said to his friend, he's like, "Hey man, you're a dancer. Can you do that?" And I just happened to have my camera out, my phone out. And I took these pictures of him studying the art, and then in rapid succession, sort of putting his body into that pose. And I went, "Oh, heck yeah." And so I captured him doing this on, you know, in my phone. And it was this moment for him and everybody around him. We all applauded because it was so incredible. And we all felt enriched by that experience, even though it was just a moment in time, if you will. So when you're doing this, when you're doing this work, how much of sort of the person who's going to be experiencing it do you keep in mind when you're designing, I hate to use the word experience again because that's what it is, when you're designing these experiences, how much of the state of mind and the transformation that you might want to have happen do you keep in mind when you're designing these events?
Well, just to really quickly touch on what you did. I think that's amazing. I would love to see that photo. I think that's fantastic and so, so awesome that you captured that. And I love that kind of you also became part of this by, you know, there was the painting and there was the observation that you had of these people interacting with it and then you capturing that moment. Mm-hmm. And I think that almost is the essence of what I kind of tried to create is, you know, you take, you can take if it's a product, if it's a moment, whatever it is that we're in encapsulating, and you kind of expand from there and think about, you know, one, of course, is very much empathy of like, how are people experience this? What's the parameters of it? And the second is how can you get them, for me, how do you get them engaged with it? And not just in kind of a 2D, I think of this of like a 3D of, you know, the space that they're in, the people that's surrounding them, even more of like their own, how their individual responses can affect other people's, you know, reactions and create a connection there. Mm. I like to sometimes play with tensions as well. So if there is, you know, something on the wall that's supposed to be like very obviously just stand and observe, maybe there's something that we put in the room that's almost like a prompt that's almost counterintuitive to it. So I love that, like a camera. Like if there was just a camera sitting there in these kind of the spaces of these traditional museum spaces, how would that shape? How would that change this experience for, right, the structure at large? So the art, the people in the room, the person who is actively capturing it, and then expanding out into like, what does that say about the structure of this museum and what they're doing by implementing something new like this? So it's kind of an interesting way of like framing this up where it's a little bit more of the impact of it and how do we, you know, create connections, create kind of a visceral response, and get people to engage with whatever it is that we're featuring, but also kind of strike, you know, a different, deeper connection with, you know, I hate to say like themselves, but what does that trigger for them? What does that make them think about? Does this make them, you know, feel more inspired, more hopeful? Like, what are we trying to draw out? So that's a little bit kind of the impetus of how I work.
Oh, that's so fabulous. I love it. And it's interesting to me, that notion of the observer versus the observed and the person who gets inspired to do something. And it's almost like the camera is kind of like a little irritant, you know, like, what is that? Why is it here? And can I play with it? And so there's a permission aspect to this that I'm wondering about. When you're doing this, because you and I share a similar philosophy that we believe everyone is creative and everyone has the ability to sort of utilize their creativity and their unique creative genius, but often we don't feel like we have permission, like we have the right. There's something that I would love to know from you, how you inspire someone. If you were to do that, if you were to leave a camera in the middle of an exhibit, how would you inspire people to get the benefit of going, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to see what I can take pictures of. I'm going to see what people are doing. Because people tend to be afraid of that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on that?
That is such an excellent question. Because my mind goes so many different ways. I love that there is kind of this little bit of a renegade, like there's a camera here. And this idea of permission is something that's fascinating that I actually did, you know, talk a little bit about when I was, you know, speaking with the UN of like, you know, you have permission and you ask for permission and where does this lie on the spectrum? You know, I think there's a couple different ways I would approach it. One, I would actually start with, someone in the room observing it, you know, observing, you know, the camera and the interactions to see what's happening. Mm-hmm. I could also see having, you know, placing someone in there that would go and just pick up the camera and look at it and maybe start looking at, you know, through the lens at different parts of the room. So it's almost, it's signaling that it's okay to touch this. Mm-hmm. In the museum is such, this is something I also touched on years ago in my thesis, is this kind of breakdown of what's, you know, happening in the traditional museum spaces of these don't touch this is shifted. And people are now in certain areas, you know, encouraged to interact with work and objects. And that's shifting. That's not everywhere, but I can see that happening more and more as time goes on. So, you know, I could definitely see, you know, putting someone in there as you know, signaling that it's okay to use the camera. Something else that I think is very fun and playful is to put something underneath the camera, just a piece of paper, a little note or something that's, you know, designed well that says, you know, use
play
this,
with me,
you know, play. Yes. Right. Something that's like a very easy prompt, but right. that maybe is not super overt. So it would take kind of a curious person, maybe, you know, some bravery, to go up and start, you know, looking at this camera and picking it up. But once they see that, that gives them permission, but it does have to a lot of times start with a little bit of curiosity, and, you know, bravery. And if needed, you know, someone to, you know, show them the way, not by saying directly, but by just showing that it's okay to pick up the camera and use it.
Yeah, I think that's great. And there is that, again, that permission aspect. And it's when I think about, I like to play with people. I know this sounds kind of weird, but I do. We were at the High Line in New York, and somebody had left an apple and like a Diet Coke can and a pencil on one of the benches. And we went, oh yeah, I've got to play with this. So I put a dollar bill underneath the apple and the Diet Coke can and just sort of set it out so that it looked almost like a little art piece. And we sat around and we watched people come up. Nobody took the dollar bill. Nobody went, oh wait, this is free money. People took pictures of it as if it was a part of one of the art installations on the High Line, because they have art there. So people thought it was art, you know?
Oh my God, that's fantastic.
Isn't it adorable? And so that's the thing for me when I think about this is, again, there is this take a moment to appreciate the magic all around you aspect to what you're doing. But you're also a business futurist. And I'm kind of going, okay, how does that translate? Because I work with businesses too, and I do it through singing, you do it through different experiences. Mm-hmm. How do you translate that to businesses? And also, frankly, how do you get business leadership to buy in that this kind of experience is beneficial to them?
So, you know, interestingly, I actually use creativity as kind of the crux of that.
Yay!
Yay, I know, right? We're like, go creativity! It's really kind of the anchor for the work that I do when I'm looking at, you know, talking about the future of business. And one of the things when I say, like, you know, business futurist, I also look at like different industries. So like Tech Table was looking at the future of hospitality. I'm very much involved also in kind of the future of work and how people will, you know, adapt to this hybrid kind of model. Mm-hmm. And work together. And what does that look like? And in order to get buy-in, I feel like you have to, I actually love to start more towards the middle or the middle top of getting people that are genuinely interested in thinking and working differently. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll use like the example of like in, you know, the workplace environment is getting people to, you know, work cross-functionally, getting people to embrace the idea of like creativity. The speech that I just gave at the UN was titled Creativity for Productivity.
And it really
yes, right? We're like, we love it. And it really was about like creativity is not just for, you know, artists, which yay, us, we love it. But we also recognize the power of it and the impact of it. Mm-hmm. And the ability to think creatively is something that's just as important as data and, you know, looking at all of the, as I like to say, like the ROI and all of those, you know, variables. Creativity is a tool. It's a untapped resource for so many companies and so many industries.
For sure.
And it's really, right, about how people work. So I like to kind of go in and lead with that idea rather than trying to say, you know, a lot of people are very much like, you know, we need to innovate. I'm like, great, what does that mean? Like, innovating for just innovation's sake is not going to get you anywhere. You have to think about your company values. You have to think about your brand. You have to think about your culture. You have to think about, you know, what is the product that you're putting out and how does this all connect? And then connecting that all together really and how people form, you know, how do they work together and push forward if it's, you know, your mission or your goals or your, you know, even like I said, your product. It's really about, you know, the people and doing their best work and putting great work out there. So that's where I like to think about creativity and these kind of creative mindsets that I work with in order to help foster that. This kind of culture of innovation is really what I like to talk about.
I love that. I love it. And you don't know this, but the previous name of this podcast was the Creative Mindset Podcast. And
oh, amazing.
Yeah. And when I made the shift to work more with businesses and organizations, it moved into being the Innovative Mindset Podcast. And the reason for that was because this notion of trying to solve problems, innovate in a way that's trying to change the world, leave things better than you found them. And if you're trying to do that, if you're trying to leave something better than you found it, innovation that's ethical is my big sort of, that's the thing I jump up on the soapbox for.
Yes.
But
I
when
love
you're
that.
Oh good, thank you. So but when you're doing this, when you're working with businesses and you need to, because you've been hired to do this, to create these experiences for the people you're going to be working with, how different is it now? During the pandemic, in person versus online, are those experiences the same? And if not, how do you make them as potent as in-person experiences?
Yes, the virtual experience. You know, just to kind of take a step back and really look, you know, what 2020 was incredibly challenging for, I think I can fair to say, everyone.
Sure.
You know what? Working in the events industry within, I would say, 3 weeks, you know, from like starting the middle of March until maybe I'll give it 6 weeks, end of April, the industry imploded. I mean, it was very challenging to experience. It was very challenging to watch. My, you know, some colleagues, my vendors, you know, people were just, they were flat out. So it was something that I actually want to talk about really quickly before I go into designing those experiences is this idea of resilience. Mm. And that it's something that also is very much part of the work that we do in innovation and creativity. It's like you have to have a sense of resilience. And it's interesting because I've been, you know, talking about it and working within that for, you know, years, but actually experiencing that in the work that I do and having to take, you know, take my medicine, if you will, was so eye-opening, you know, in the matter of, you know, months. Anybody who was an event producer or an event planner or an experienced designer or anything that was working in real life essentially had to learn how to produce a live broadcast and using technology that was not ready for it. You know, platforms that weren't able to handle the streaming capabilities that we needed. Mm-hmm. And really kind of figure it out on the fly. So just from that lens, it was so fascinating because everybody was learning at the same time, and you as a creator and a, you know, producer was learning at the same time as the people that were consuming it and having to go online.
Sure.
So kind of looking at that lens, it's interesting now to say, wow, that was only 2 years ago. That feels like, you know, a decade ago, because there was so much transformation that happened within a time span of, you know, 12 to 18 months.
Sure.
So one of the things that, as you know, as technology started to get smarter and people started to kind of embrace it, there were things that we were able to really harness within virtual platforms that we weren't before. And one of those things is like speed and accessibility. So, you know, when you're creating these experiences in real life, some of the logistics, you know, as anybody who's in events or any type of programming knows, like logistics will get in the way, and, you know, bringing speakers on site, bringing, getting people to travel in, you know, that was all eliminated. You could have someone, as you know, like overseas participating in an event that they previously said no to because they couldn't be there. So there was this accessibility. People could log on faster. They could consume a bit more. They could learn more. And there was also something that was kind of, you know, interesting for me, which was this idea that we lost the ability to have what I like to call casual collisions, which would happen in these, you know, any kind of event where you bump into someone and you start talking, you know, that was lost. But what we could do was create, you know, numerous opportunities for breakout sessions, numerous breakout sessions where people could hop in and out of rooms, could participate in numerous conversations. We could have, within a click of a button, you could go from, you know, being in one main quote unquote virtual room into 10 and then come back into the main room and be put into a different room. So in that way, it was really interesting where while people were so disconnected, there was this interesting way to create connections through it. And of course, all of the, you know, tangible, you know, I like to say went back to like the direct, people thought direct mail wasn't happening anymore. It sure is. And like all of this, like the return to direct mail and the packages and that tangible, you know, textural experience that people would have at home. So it was a very interesting, as someone, again, that's worked in the kind of online, offline kind of connection space for as long as I have, it was fascinating to see just a new iteration of this.
I love it. Sorry, you'll hear me sort of stay silent for a minute. I just want, I like to warn everybody because I sort of take a second to take in all that I've heard so that I can actually listen and be present.
I love that. We can sit in silence, you know, as long as you want.
Exactly. Thank you. Well, in radio, they call it dead air. I don't call it dead air. I call it anticipatory air.
Oh my gosh. That is brilliant.
Well, thank you. Anyway, so the thing that I'm thinking about in this moment, and I love what you said about how pivoting is one of those buzzwords, but it really was a course correction, a change in direction that everybody had to do in 3 weeks. We all went from, oh, I'm going to this event to I'm going to be sitting at home and petting my cat a lot. And yet, in that moment, we're, you know, your Zoom, your Skype, your all of StreamYard, all of these different platforms started being so much more useful to us. And here, the thing that I'm not concerned, but wondering about, in live situations, someone who's presenting might be able to go, I'm seeing people over in the back there that are being very quiet, and maybe they're introverts and maybe they're shy, but we want to have everyone experience this, so I'm going to sort of engage with them a little bit more. But I notice in online spaces, people turn off their cameras. They might be going to make some nachos. You know, they're. How do you develop an experience for someone who either is shy or introverted, or who just doesn't seem to be engaged and doesn't really have to be, because they can turn off their camera and just, you know, go polish their fingernails?
That does happen.
It does, for sure.
People, yes, and I love that people definitely get up and make nachos in the middle of that. They so do. That was, yeah, something I just wrote about too, of like, do we need to really send people boxed, you know, food and drink anymore? I feel like people are just doing that now on their own.
They are.
Right. I think there's a couple different ways to facilitate that, and I totally hear you as someone that has a background in performing, and being able to read the room is so important. There's a couple things for people presenting. You know, it's interesting training. I mean, the virtual presentations I've done is literally, you know, oftentimes is I'm staring at my screen. I can't see anyone. Right. And, you know, it's almost like you're on stage. And for me, you know, as someone that has a background in performance, I have to say, you know, I'm gonna run with this, and whatever happens, happens, because I don't know what's happening on the other end. So I can't
They're
see
making
it.
Nachos.
Yeah, they're making nachos. Great. Hopefully this is, inspiring them to put something extra on there. You know, whatever that is. But, really kind of leaning into this and engaging, performing, like I'm on stage and this is live and this is happening right now. So I'm going to put my energy into it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to, try to cultivate as much interest and intrigue as I can. Just kind of see what happens once the camera comes back on, and always, always leave room for Q&A. And when that happens, to be able to at least, interact with the boxes on the screen. The flip side of that is I could be wrong, but I feel like this has become a little bit more standard, is, the chat function and having people monitoring the chat and making sure that engagement is happening and encouraging people at the top of whatever presentation or, conference panel, whatever it is to use this chat function and have people taking those notes and taking the questions and interacting with them. I've seen that being used all the time now in some of the work that I do that involves this. Mm-hmm. There's also then breaking it up, making sure that you're not having 3 hours or 2 hours of, or however long it is of content straight without a break to get people to, go to a virtual breakout room or to have some sort of prompt to get up and do something in their space. That's something that's really important too, to keep that, engagement happening. Mm-hmm. So, it's interesting. People are like, oh, there's, could be Zoom fatigue or people are going to tune out. And I was like, well, there's something called binge watching Netflix, binge watching shows that people are really good at, like sitting and watching things. So it really depends on how engaging you make it and how interesting, and mixing it up a little bit. Things don't, this day and age with the virtual platforms, people are like, we're just going to focus on these topics and make sure they're really, stick to the theme that we're going, that we're focusing on. I'm like, no, play a bit. This is an opportunity. Where's a commercial break? Throw in a video. Throw in a 5-minute inspirational speaker. Like, give something people, so give it them opportunity to change and play and spark some new ideas. So, that's something else. Like, people have to play with this. Like, now is the time. The technology's here. They know what to do. So now surprise them. The surprise and delight can be back. It's not just, for in-person events anymore.
I love that you said that, actually, because it is interesting to me. I was booked by Spotify Corporate to do a thing for all of their employees, and it was on mindful creativity. They're like, you're a podcaster, you talk about creativity and mindfulness, let's put you up there and talk about mindful creativity for half an hour. Okay, but I wasn't going to talk about it for half an hour. Instead, I was going to do activities with the people who were there, 4,000 people. It was great.
That's amazing.
It was really cool. The thing is, though, that in that moment, the sort of, I guess, the user experience, that's not my language for it, but the user experience was not what sort of Spotify Corporate had said you need to do. Mm. It was more what I, as the person designing this half hour with them, was getting from what they needed, if you see what I mean. So I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about, like, you're an experienced designer, which I think is amazing, but there is this sort of push and pull between what you expect the user experience to be or what it might be and designing that experience. And I'm wondering if you can talk a little bit about both planning for it and also in the moment, what's the difference between those two, the user experience and experience design? And how can people who are professionals in business learn from this experience design field to improve their work, their businesses, their mindset?
Yes, I mean, we could be here all day talking about this. So I'm like,
I've got nowhere to be.
UX, user experience, traditionally is really focused on kind of product or services that are focused like online. Mm. Experience design is, it's a little bit more, it could part of it could happen online, but also a lot of it could happen offline. So it is, interestingly enough, kind of become this crossover between the two. And it was really involves, you know, how we interact. There's a lot of empathy that's there. And it's, you know, how people experience these kind of real world interactions, or when they're online and they're going to be coming offline, or like what, how do we facilitate that and not just focus on like this single journey of one, you know, website and that's it. It's really about multiple journeys. It's about, you know, multiple pathways, if you will. It's empathizing with different, you know, it's not just one idea that you're using, but you're thinking about numerous experiences all at once. And whether that happens in one room, numerous rooms, online, offline, all of it, it's kind of connecting it all together. You know, I think whenever I design an experience, I do think about the quote unquote user first. But that user could be a client or a customer or an attendee or all three. It could mm-hmm. be a speaker. It could be, you know, someone that's flown in from overseas, a person that's driven only 1 hour. Like there's each person is going to have a very different experience. So you want to make whatever programming or interaction you're creating very thoughtful mm-hmm. And multi-layered. So, you know, one of the things that I think, you know, people can learn about or different businesses can learn about this is, you know, obviously the application of empathy into whatever they're creating and thinking about, you know, not just maybe the most efficient path and the easiest path or the least expensive, but what will be the most enriching for the quote unquote user and offering up different moments of, like we just talked about, kind of surprise and delight to kind of, you know, keep people perked up, keep them awake and offer up, you know, new ways to engage and interact, especially in this kind of post-pandemic world. People are wanting to, you know, gather together. I'm going to use that specific example for now, but people are wanting to gather together. Some people are afraid. Some people are, you know, over it and just they don't care. Some people are really eager to, you know, will go up and start talking to people. Other people are, you know, introverts and are showing up that haven't socialized much in, you know, with new people in a while. So how do you, that in itself is just it's like a micro study of any type of like business environment or community environment. So one thing that's always interesting is, you know, again, going back to this observer kind of mentality is you can plan the most perfect experience, the most perfect event, a marketing program. It could be, you know, a new website, but when you actually launch it or it happens, you have to be ready to iterate and you have to be ready to adapt and, to use your word, pivot to what's happening in real time. And I think that ability to think on your feet that anybody who's in the events world has to do
for sure
all the time is something that everybody can do. Everybody needs that for whatever job they're doing. Is you can plan like the best of them, but how do you then react in real time if your plan doesn't go to plan? So yeah, like what tools and skills do you have to use that? So again, creativity, creative mindsets, thinking outside the box. You know, one of the things I like to talk about in experience design and just in creativity in general is this idea of constraints. You're always going to be given constraints, you know, whether that's budget, your budget gets cut, your time frame gets cut. You know, there's going to be shifting constraints all the time. And one thing that I do is I flip it very quickly from being like, okay, I'm limited. Now I can't do this or now I can't do that. And I think of it more as a table that I use to build on. I'm like, okay, this is what I have. How can I build from this place? What can I create now from this? What are some guardrails that I can put in place? And it's the more that you do that, the more that you're able to implement that in real time. So I think that kind of this idea of constraints as a gift, if you will, rather than a hindrance is one of the biggest things I can, you know, can offer anyone that's doing experience design or any type of planning. Taken in, Isolde.
Yes. I am. I always want to say I'm sorry, but I'm not actually sorry. I want to take a second.
I love it.
It, you know, you mentioned guardrails and I went, yes, I talk about like when you're a little kid and you go bowling and I put up those rails so that you, no matter where you throw the ball, it's going to kind of go in the right direction because you've got these things that are sort of beautiful boundaries that are easy for you. And I think that's great. I love those guardrails and I still use them because I'm a terrible bowler. But when you're in that space though, you're like, you're in the space of, I've got these constraints. How can I make this experience amazing with this? It's like using a prompt word. If you're a writer, you now have a focal point, even if it's not something that is the, you know, the world's your oyster mushroom. You can do whatever you want. It's more, okay, this is where I am. This is my foundation. And that works great if you're planning events, and that works great if you're designing experiences. What about if you're an individual? How does somebody adopt, pick up, develop a real, I've talked about this, and my longtime listeners, if you're listening to this, you know I talk about the creative mindset all the time. But if we look at innovation as solving problems creatively while you're trying to do the right thing, right, as a company, even more as an individual, then how does somebody working in a company adopt that truly creative mindset in their workplace? And more importantly, even, I think, maybe, how do the people who are running the company, the leadership, foster that kind of culture where a creative mindset, an innovative mindset, is something that's treasured and valued?
I'm so happy you asked that question.
Well, thank you.
Yes. Buzzword of 2022 is entrepreneurship. But it really is this, I mean, one, leaders should absolutely foster a culture that doesn't have to focus on, but that applauds and supports entrepreneurship. So that essentially means giving people within your company agency to create new programs, toolkits, you know, structures, whatever that is, to help support the organization, the company, the brand, the business. And what I love about this is that, you know, people always like, oh, I'm not an entrepreneur. Or I like to just, you know, I'm not interested in breaking free and starting my own thing. I'm like, you don't have to. You can do that within the structure of a company. And, you know, one of the things that I picked up at when I worked at Google 10 plus years ago, it's hard to imagine it was that long, but it was about 10 years ago, actually, was, you know, something I'm sure you've heard of this, called the 20% Project. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've had some conversations with people lately, some brilliant people, telling me that, you know, the 20% Project is over. It's no more, it's not supported anymore. You know, companies, leaders won't give people that, you know, buy-in to take 20% of their workload and, you know, apply it to a passion project or another team. And I'm like, okay, but what the 20% Project did, at least for me and the people that I worked with, was inspire a culture of entrepreneurship. This idea of, you know, oh, I have this idea for something. I really would like to start bringing it to life.
Yes.
And right. And some of that, yes, it does have to start as volunteer. You know, you're going to have to volunteer your time. A lot of times that's how it starts. Mm. But if you're interested in something and you're passionate about something, it helps you work better. Really, that's the essence of it, because it makes you more motivated. It sparks new ideas. It could connect you to new people. If you're trying to develop something new, usually you're going to be talking to some new people, getting some new ideas, getting some new perspectives. And it's really like one of the most powerful, you know, tools, if you will, or powerful elements that a company can offer. And it won't cost them anything. If anything, it'll make the company more, I dare say, I mean, one, it will make people's work more enjoyable. Two, it can make people more productive. And two, it could make, and three, it could make them more profitable. Just saying, you never know. So it's like, let's go back to business, go back to money. That's like, let's look at that. So if business leaders have that as part of their company values, entrepreneurship, and teach, you know, the managers or the directors or however high up they want to go to foster that as well, that's key. And taking it one step further, as people are getting promoted, what comes with that promotion? Like, besides, yes, money, obviously, that should, and always with more money comes more responsibility, but what other tools are they getting? What kind of other trainings are you offering them? Can you offer them, you know, this idea of like manager training and entrepreneurship and how to encourage that as part of your, promotional ladder as people move up? It's something that they learn about so that they can then distill that downward into, you know, the teams that they're managing. That's what I say.
I love it. Yeah, you know, it's funny. When I get booked a lot to do communication workshops with people who are recently promoted because they know how to do their jobs, but now they're in a different layer, if you will, mm-hmm. and they don't mm-hmm. know how to communicate either to the people who are in the same layer, but also now suddenly the people who are in a different layer who they used to be in the same layer with, wow, how do you communicate around that? What do you need to do? And if you're going to bring creativity into it, that's a really important part of it. So I agree with you wholeheartedly that that kind of training is needed. And there's a diversity issue here too. Like, yes. you've been promoted. Your experience now as somebody who's a manager or something, some level higher than where you were, is going to be very different. And yet we're also facing the fact that every company and organization culture needs to have practices that encourage and embrace diversity. As an experienced designer, how do you celebrate and let and encourage that to happen and evolve?
So diversity, so it's interesting because the way that I look at diversity is on a broader scale.
Excellent.
Yes, absolutely. People and culture are essential, and celebrating all of, you know, the culture and where people came from and honoring that. But there is something that I feel like what people are missing is this idea of diversity of thought. And that comes from across the board, and different, yes, diverse people and culture will have different thoughts mm-hmm. and different ideas. Mm-hmm. But that's also could be this, you know, a same group of people, but with a million different ideas and thoughts.
For sure.
And how do you, right? How do you cultivate that? How do you encourage this idea of sharing your ideas and sharing your thoughts and to create something that is inclusive of all of that. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I always like to point to when we're talking about this is this idea of listening to diverse ideas, celebrating diverse thoughts, incorporating them, building off of them leads to this idea of synergy, mm-hmm. which is, right, something that's kind of a collective that's bigger and more impactful than, you know, the individual parts. So in order to reach kind of a synergistic place, you have to find this like crossover within diverse thoughts and ideas. And each person, again, you know, it's interesting going, touching back on this idea of permission that you had, that you brought up before, it's also encouraging people to share those thoughts mm-hmm. and share those mm-hmm. ideas. And listening, you know, instead of changing, you know, you don't start with a sentence with but, you start with and, right? And you build off of it.
I love that.
Right? So that's something I think it's so important, and it's something that should be part of all the training, is cultivating a culture of diversity and diversity of thought and sharing and openness, which is hard because that also leaves people vulnerable, which it's always challenging, especially in, you know, in workplace environments.
Sure.
But I think it's something that's super important. And as we do it more, the better we get and the more robust kind of ideas, solutions, and programs is, you know, we'll come up with, which again leads to innovation. So it's super, super important to embrace those kind of aspects of diversity.
I love that. And you know, what you just touched on about, it really comes down to people feeling like they can. So permission, mm-hmm. yes, but also the confidence to do it. You know, yep. when I get booked to do my confidence trainings with people, because it's confidence from creativity. And mm-hmm. it's feeling like you deserve to say, to bring up, to envision the ideas that you have and then even work on them. And I can see it all changing, right? I can see all of this stuff becoming more prevalent because I think people are realizing it works. So when I'm booked to do these conferences or when I'm booked to work with companies and organizations, a lot of people are going, okay, we want to do it, but we don't know how. So we're moving into that. But you're someone who's looking at the future. And you're someone who's looking at the future.
Yes.
So what are your thoughts? Where are we going with this? It's all evolving. Certainly 2020 made us go kaboom. Everything is different now. Where are we moving with this? How is it going to be with conferences and the way companies innovate, the way they work? And we really honestly with Web3 and looking at everything from cryptocurrency to NFTs, it's all this big, huge crucible right now. As someone who's got your finger on the pulse of where we're going, what are your thoughts on where we're going in the next few years and how events will change, how Web3 is going to change everything, and how we're going to evolve to meet some of these challenges?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, you know, where the spheres that I work in, some people will say, you know, they're really siloed, and I was like, no, there's overlap in a lot of them, the kind of the future of work, the, you know, how businesses will run, how they'll operate, along with experience design and designing for both, you know, in-person and online events, and then this kind of, you know, rise of Web3, if you will, and then, you know, next-gen tech. There is this interesting kind of, you know, Venn diagram where it does all overlap, does all kind of intersect. And what's fascinating is that we're really at the start of it, and there's so much being created right now within these realms that it's, I think, in the next few years, there's going to be a lot of, a lot that's popping up. There is going to be so much opportunity to beta test a lot of new ways of working, and not a lot of new ways of experiencing, you know, events, if you will, or gatherings, as I like to say, because that could be anywhere from an event to a, you know, a corporate event to a, you know, personal, you know, milestone celebration to how people will gather for work. You know, there's just going to be so much evolution in that, how people gather for play. So we're going to see, yes, I totally believe that there's going to be a lot that's going to be happening, you know, in the quote unquote metaverse, and with the development of, you know, new Web3 and gaming and this kind of personification that's happening through these platforms, communities / like tribes that are going to start popping up in some mm-hmm. of these kind of metaverse, you know, areas that's already started happening. I actually know a couple of people who have a family in their games. This is my, you know, whatever the name of the game is, you know, X family. And they've never met in person. You know, they obviously talk through the game, but it's really fascinating. We're also going to see then kind of, you know, a different realm thing as, you know, talking about the Web3 and, you know, some of these NFTs, which right now, you know, everything, unfortunately, crypto and the stocks, things are crashing. But, you know, there is this idea of NFTs as access that's really popped up and become more and more popular in the past, I don't know, I'd say year. And looking at how these creation of NFTs will help create communities, there'll be benefits. I think it was, you know, Gary Vee just opened, I can't remember when it was, I think the past couple months, opened just the first like NFT restaurant, where, you know, if you were part of this holder, you could have, you know, own part of this NFT and you can have access to this restaurant and you become, you know, part of this like community of people that will be able to have this experience. So that in itself, it's interesting because you're starting with this digital, again, starting with something digital, but it's filtering down into this kind of community, community-based experience that's happening in real life and in real time. So that's something else that's like so fascinating that like, once again, like online to offline and, you know, digital and, you know, influencing real life. And, you know, vice versa. I think that as we're looking at how people are gathering in person and in real life and people are anxious to, you know, get back together, we're looking at having a little bit more over the next few years. I like to say like it's going to be meaning over buzz. So creating more meaningful experiences over more of these kind of like buzzworthy, quote unquote, immersive experience. Like if you want an immersive experience, you're going to head to the metaverse. And if you're going to be creating that immersive experience, then, you know, you better make it very robust and very engaging. But as people will gather in real life, it is, what is that meaning? What can they get there that they can't get online? And that will be more of like meeting people, exchanging of information in real life, being in the, you know, a beautiful setting or in a city or in a city that's not just in one place. Like you're going to go to a conference in New York City, but you're not necessarily that conference isn't just going to happen in one space anymore. And I'm not talking about like the, you know, brand parties that will happen elsewhere. It's going to be kind of filtrated into the city to give people different experiences that's connected with this one kind of moment of being in real life and sharing those experiences together. If I say experience one more time, but that's that's like where it's, again, like it's this interesting kind of online, offline, creating meaning, you know, creating communities, and the different ways that that's going to foster, you know, going to be fostered through these kind of new technologies and the, you know, coming out of COVID and people being able to socialize again. It's just there's going to be so much, again, a lot.
Thank you for that. Wow. Wow. Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me listening to you. I'm kind of going, the thing that I keep hearing from you is that it's about interaction, human interaction. How are we moving towards that integrated interactivity where people are still engaged? And I guess the thing that I wonder, and by the way, Jackie, we're going to be talking for the next 6 hours. I just wanted to let you know that. I have so many questions. But how do we as creators, as creatives, figure out what the benefits should be to these people who are going to be attending our events, right? You're an experienced designer. How do you figure out what the benefit will be, and or how do you find out what is going to be something that engages them to interact with the other people?
Now it's my time for a reflective pause. I can't remember. What did you call it?
Anticipatory error.
Anticipatory error. Can we root this in a real life example or like some sort of like tangible example?
Sure.
It's such a great question and it's very broad, and it really, you kind of got to go back to like go back to the intent. As always, like Simon Sinek, but go back to the why. you know, why are we doing X program, event, experience, content, whatever it is? What is the purpose of it? And I like to look at this specifically through I'm going to talk about through like kind of more business, like if I'm hired by a company to do this. Mm-hmm. I look at both metrics, the qualitative and the quantitative. Like people are so focused on like one area of data. And I was like, do not forget about the, you know, qualitative metrics of this, of like, how do you make people feel? So, you know, how do you make people feel? What's the reactions? What's going to be the visceral response? I feel like I'm saying this, I've said this earlier, but looking at both. So yes, you want to look at like the ROI. You want to look at to make sure like the budget's going to be met. You're going to, you know, make sure you're looking at like you're hitting all of the key goals and whatever kind of values are in place to measure success. And you also have to put into this like this is a, to your point, it's human interaction. Mm-hmm. And how do you facilitate that? How do you make people feel comfortable? How do you make them feel welcome? How do you make them feel inspired and like they belong? And those two tensions are what really helps create a what I like to say as a meaningful experience. Mm-hmm. So that's, I think that's kind of going down to the, that's where I start with any type of project I'm working on, is getting really clear with both of those. And, you know, as projects goes on and things change and more constraints are put in place, it's interesting to, you know, take a moment and look back and say, okay, hold on. When we started this project, this XYZ was critical. These were the top three things. Are these still the top three things, or has that changed?
Right.
So, right, you're iterating as you're going and making sure that you're staying true to the experience you're creating and the value that you're not only producing but also being, you know, measured on as a very business oriented, you know, response.
And that's that's perfect. And it's you know, it what's interesting to me about what you just said is everything that you said keeps touching back on creative thinking.
Yes.
Thinking quickly, thinking outside the box, being able to look at and analyze and then see what does need to be changed, if anything. That's creativity at its core, mm-hmm. right? So I'm grateful that you said that. As two creatives, we're both sort of being each other's cheerleaders, but I think you're fabulous because you're able to see that and also apply it. So I'm so grateful you're out there doing the work you're doing. That's wonderful. And as I said, I could keep you here for the next 6 hours, but I realized you have a life to get back to. So I would love it if you don't mind, if somebody goes, I need to work with Jackie, I need to know more about her. Can you do me a favor? I know people learn differently, so I'm going to put all this in the show notes, but could you point out where your website is, what your socials are, just so that we can have it in an auditory way as well?
Yes. So I know my name is spelled a little differently, but it's pronounced Jackie Badson. And you can find me, more information about me, at jackiebadson.com. I'm also on Instagram at Jackie Badson, and then also on LinkedIn, which is actually under either Jackie Badson or Jacqueline Badson, which is JACQUELINE. So all of those areas, you can find me there. And I would love to continue talking with you. And if, you know, anybody out there is interested in continuing this conversation, please reach out. And this has been so fantastic. I mean, really is all that I could talk to you for days.
We're going to have to do this again. I'd love to have you back. You are welcome back anytime, because this is catnip. This topic is catnip to me. I'm super grateful that you're here, and we're going to come back in a minute because we're going to do the bonus episode. But I have this one question that I ask everybody who comes on the show, and it's a silly question, but I find that it yields some profound answers. And the question is this: if you had an airplane that could skywrite anything for the whole world to see, what would you say?
Wow. As cheesy as this sounds, it would say, be yourself. It really would.
That's not cheesy at all. I think that's fabulous. Yourself.
Yeah, because if you try to... If you try to create from anything, any other place but that, but what's really like authentically you and what's real to you and what's right, it's you're building on, you know, a broken platform. So be yourself and move from there.
I love it. I love it. Or as the meme goes, be yourself. Everyone else is already taken.
Exactly.
Oh, Jackie, thank you so much for being here. We're going to come right back do the bonus episode. But until then, if you want access to the bonus episode, you know how to do that. Links in the show notes. This is Isolde Trachtenberg. Super grateful to Jackie Badzen for being here and for taking the time. Reminding you, if you're listening to this, first of all, go find out more about this amazing person. You know she's doing work that needs to be done. It's crucial, it's critical, and obviously the United Nations thinks so you gotta check her out. But until next time, I remind you, as always, to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind. Thank you so much for joining me today. I really appreciate you being here. Please subscribe to the podcast if you're new, and it would mean the world to me if you told a friend about it. Today's episode was produced by Isolde Trachtenberg and is copyright 2022. As always, please remember this is for educational and entertainment purposes only. Past performance does not guarantee future results, although we can always hope. Until next time, remember to be bold, be creative, and most of all, be kind.